We're glad you're with us for this podcast produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. For more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And if you get a chance to rate our podcast on your provider, we'd appreciate you taking the time to do that. And now, today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, February 8th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become an above average investor. And through the use of good, sound investing principles and commitment to homework, doing your homework, you can be successful. And you have to mix those two ingredients with some discipline, which kind of goes along with the investing principles, but discipline is big as well. And there are a lot of factors that go into being successful, and we are here each and every day to help shed some light on the various areas that you need to sharpen up on to make better decisions. Now, we talk about stocks because you tend to ask about stocks. So where do you go when you're looking for those value or growth stocks? If you look at the market by sector, then you're aware of areas of healthcare sector that might be high flying and others that are kind of boring. But the healthcare sector overall, let's look at that. Let's zero in on it. And this is an economic sector that consists of companies engaged in various areas of the healthcare space, including manufacturing medical equipment, supplies and pharmaceuticals, as well as operating healthcare facilities, provision of managed healthcare as well. So there's different areas within healthcare, and they all carry their own type of risk. Okay. Now, healthcare-related job growth has been really strong over the past decade or so, thanks to a combination of laws like the Affordable Care Act and secondary markets that emerge from them. And in fact, the sector created more than 400,000 jobs year over year in 2016, more than a fifth of the 2.2 million jobs that were created last year. So it's certainly an industry that has momentum. And LinkedIn says it's one of the out of the list of 10 most promising healthcare jobs in 2017. They analyze different career options that have high medium rates of pay and don't necessarily require, you know, a ton of experience or a medical degree. There's plenty of openings, and they're experiencing strong growth. That whole area is experiencing strong growth. So is it a sector to invest in? And how do you approach that sector? And I know there are many of our listeners are looking for great bargain stocks, no matter what sector they're in. And Jim Fink, who writes for Investing Daily, quotes William O'Neill's investment classic, How to Make Money in Stocks. He says his research shows that 3 out of every 4 stocks follows the trend of their respective index. In other words, no matter how good one particular company might their business is doing in isolation, it's really all about how the industry group is performing overall. They could be having a good business relative, but if the industry is poor overall, it's probably going to have a lot of headwinds. And vice versa, if the industry is doing well, it's going to have some tailwinds. There's one stock today I can think of Gilead, which people call all the time. It was down huge today. Maybe you want to talk about that. I'm sure you do. I know somebody out there does, because I know I get calls on it all the time. So we can talk about that. We can talk about the sector as a whole. Maybe you have a different sector in mind. So we can talk about any money issues that you have, that you're thinking about, whether it's about real estate or interest rates or bonds or commodities, the stock market overall, growth versus value, annuities, universal life insurance, term life insurance. There's so many subjects to cover. Budgets, global economy, China, Europe. I mean, it's endless, really. So you can check in right now or anytime with any money questions at 888-99-CHART. That is our number.
Hello, Justin. Hello, Steve. Raphael from Jersey. I've been listening to you guys for like 3 years, something like that, and this is a great show. I love it. Thank you. I think that you guys break down your investments into three fields. One is a value play. Two is your blue chip mainstays. I guess three would be like your speculative stocks. I'm not sure on that one. So the reason why I say is because I always hear you guys talking about like Teva Pharmaceuticals and stuff like this. And, you know, ones that everybody hates and been beaten down. Now, the thing is, when you're getting in a stock like that, you're basically going in holding it for the short term, right? You're just trying to watch the stock reflate to some past historical norm. And then when you think it's reached some sort of a fair value, you release it. And then you're looking for another opportunity to do sort of the same thing. And then maybe something like J&J, on the other hand, for the most part, you kind of just hold it, you know, because of its steadiness. And really not being in those positions where it's so badly hated. That's what I wanted to know. Do you guys break your stuff down like that? Because that's what I'm getting an impression of. Again, I love the show. Have a great day. Bye.
That's a great call. I love the way you broke it down. I would say in general that that's true. Certain stocks, certain companies have flavors of both. Where they can be good big blue chip names, but they still have some growth potential to them. You know, I think kind of Apple in that vein of a cross between a growth stock and a blue chip stock. Now there are we are value investors, so we do tend to look at, you know, you talk about Teva Pharmaceuticals, and you know that is the type of name that we would look. It's beaten down, still good cash flows, good earnings. And, you know, the always worry is that you're in a value trap, which I think Gilead is one of those. Teva, not so much. And, you know, we do look for those, and it depends on what strategy we're employing and what areas of the marketplace we like. And we do look for those beaten down names that are attractive to us, and we will hold them. And in not necessarily short term, we could hold them for a year, 2 years, 5 years. It just depends on how the business goes, when it does get what we feel overvalued or above value, we might trim the name, rebalance it into a lower percentage of the portfolio, maybe sell the whole thing and use that capital to redeploy in other good opportunities that might now be undervalued in today's market versus, you know, a holding that we had a few years back that was undervalued then and maybe overvalued now. So there are different ways to view the market. I like your breakdown. And in general, yeah, I would break down most opportunities in the marketplace into one of those three categories. And we are in the value beaten down name strategy camp usually, but we do have core holdings like you talked about, Johnson & Johnson, not necessarily one of our core holdings. We had owned that up until, I believe, late last year, but that was another name that we sold, and we thought it was at value, so we got rid of it and moved our capital somewhere else. So those are all different strategies you can employ. Being going after the high-flying names that can work. But it is certainly much higher risk as well. So great call. I like your thinking, and hopefully that clarified it for you. Let's go to Steve in San Francisco. How you doing, Steve?
Pretty good. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
So my question is, I wanted to open up a Roth IRA for my child who's under 18 years of age. And if I can, what's the rules? And I understand, like, I can invest in, like, mutual funds or ETFs. Now, do they lower the minimum investment because it's for a child?
No, there shouldn't be a change in the minimum investment. Usually that's just an opening account. I don't think you can – let me think. I'm not sure for a child what depositing it for a child. Because I know on a normal IRA they need to have some sort of earned income. I believe they might have to have some sort of earned income. Minimum.
Yeah, from what I've read – they can say it can be like babysitting or whatever.
Yeah,
my child's going to be getting her first job here next week.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, so they have to have some level of earned income for you to make that deposit. I think you can deposit up to whatever that earned income is. I'm not a tax, these are little tax implications, and I'm not a tax professional, but I do believe she has to earn some money for you to do it. But yeah, you can make that contribution on her behalf. For a brokerage firm, I don't think the minimums should change. But usually, most brokerage firms, the minimums are so low now, $100 or a couple hundred dollars, it shouldn't really matter too much.
Oh, I see. Okay. Very good. And I guess when they become 18 years of age and it comes out of like a custodial type account and goes directly to the child, they'll be in charge of it then?
Yeah, there are. It's how you set up the account. That's something you talk to the whoever you're setting up the account with, and they'll fill you in on when the child can take control of that account. But usually, it's at 18.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Steve. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. If you're looking at different sectors of the market or industries, and you have a question on which direction you should go with your investments, give me a call. I want to hear from you. Are you fully aware of the pros and cons of the investments you're looking at? And I can give you that. If you have a question about a particular asset class or company, I can give you a sense of, well, what are the pros, what are the cons? And that's how you have to think about any investment. So I want to talk to you. But anything that's on your mind, 888-99-CHART is how to get through to me right now. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So you get through and ask your question this hour. Now, the longer you wait, the bigger your monthly check will be when it comes to Social Security. But there are other factors you'll want to consider. So when to take Social Security sooner rather than later. It's one of our main talking points today. I want to touch on. Also, I want to take an inside look at the Snapchat IPO. I know people are probably interested in that. Also, is Trump bullish or bearish for gold? Is he bullish or bearish for gold? And I'll argue why. And then the dollar. If I'm advising Trump on whether or not the dollar, you should try to get the dollar up or down. What factors might I consider, and what would my end recommendation be for him? So we'll talk about that as well, and we can get into a few other topics. I have a bunch. China's foreign exchange reserves plummeted last month. We can talk about that. There's so much on the docket this hour. But ultimately, I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is the number to get through and ask your question. Let's take a look at the market real quick today. We had the Dow down 36 points. The S&P was up about a point and a half. NASDAQ up 8. Really another boring, do-nothing day for the markets. I think tomorrow could be some fireworks tomorrow after earnings and the market's looking a little tired up here, and this kind of in conjunction with one of my talking points, I think the Trump bump is still waning to some degree. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. I invite you to watch my InvestTalk views on investtalk.com. With the blue Pacific Ocean over my shoulders, I touch on topics people are talking about and some they're not. So right now, watch my commentary called Does Dow 20,000 Matter? It's right there for you on investtalk.com. Let's go to Mark in Mountain View. How are you doing, Mark?
Hey, Justin. Just a quick question. What is your take on Goldman Sachs? Is it going to benefit from the Trump presidency? I'm thinking of getting into it for the long position. What would be a good price for that, please?
Okay. Well, it certainly got a big bump after the election. It was trading around $175 a share then, and now it's at 100 or $240 a share to close today. I think you've missed it. I think that it will be all unwound to at some point this year. So if it can get back around the $160 level, that's when I'd pick it up. But I think it's overvalued at these levels. There's too much optimism that Trump is going to do great things for the banking sector. And, you know, interest rates are starting to go back down, which is not good for the banking sector overall. And so I would, you know, Goldman Sachs is a fine company to have long term, but at these levels, it's overvalued. And I do think a lot of this bump from the Trump election will be unwound. So I would avoid it for now. But if you can get into the, you know, mid 100s, you know, 170, somewhere around there, then I would think about picking it up then.
Okay. And do you have time for another one?
Sure, go for it.
Netflix.
I'm not a fan of Netflix. It seems to defy the horrendous fundamental picture that it shows. But, you know, it's certainly a good company. It should be on everyone's watch list. But at these levels, I mean, I cannot in good conscience recommend to buy Netflix with its hemorrhaging cash. Its debt continues to rise. Its profitability is profitable, but it's compared to what you're paying for it, it needs to go much, much lower. I mean, it's $62 billion market cap, and its operating cash from operations is actually negative. Its operating to earnings yield is only 0.5%. I mean, this is the epitome of a terrible value. So I would not be buying Netflix.
Okay. Thank you so much.
No problem. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling, Mark. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question. We have about 30 minutes left in the show, so it goes by pretty quick, so get your call in sooner rather than later. Now, when to take Social Security? Should you take it sooner than later is the big question. And we've talked before on the show about how if you wait, right, you can start taking Social Security at 62. If you wait to your full retirement age, which is either 66 or 67, depending on when you're born, your payout each year will rise 6 2/3%, so 6.67%. And then from your full retirement age till 70, it goes up 8% each year after that. So that's a nice increase every single year as long as you can wait it out, right? And for most people, the break-even time frame is about 80. If you live past 80, then it was worthwhile to hold off on those payments until you're 70 and get that bigger monthly check, you know, post-70. So if you're in good health and odds are good that you're going to live past 80, then you probably want to postpone taking it. You want to wait. But, you know, it's not a one-size-fit-all model when it comes to Social Security. You need to look at through the lens of your goals and to develop the best strategy for you. Now, let's say you want to retire at 62 and you need $5,000 a month or so in total for retirement income. And say you have some pensions and other income, and you can take Social Security and it will bridge that gap. And in total, you know, you're going to have enough money for retirement. Then maybe you take it early because your guaranteed income or semi-guaranteed income amounts to the total amount you're going to need in retirement. So if that's the case, then either the odds are or then it's not a terrible idea to take it a little early, right? Now, if you wait, a lot of people will say, well, I'm going to wait until I'm 70, get that increase, and I'm going to invest or use the money that I have in, you know, my IRA or 401k or some sort of retirement account to sustain myself until Social Security is taken. But the problem is you're taking money away from future returns of 8 or 10% or more from those retirement accounts. So that's something to consider as well. The opportunity cost. that you would have gotten if you kept that money in your retirement accounts. And then also something to think about is Social Security is not inheritable, right? So if you're taking money out of investment accounts, then that money will not go to your heirs. So these are different factors you have to think about. But for most people, you're going to want to wait until you are at least the full retirement age, and probably till 70, to as long as your health is going to allow you to live past 80. Now we're heading into part two of our Monday Invest Talk. Plenty of time to get your question in. I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our live number at 888-992-4278.
Our podcast continues next. Here's good reason number five for a portfolio checkup with Steve.
Many portfolios I look at are weighted in just a few or one or two sectors.
A diverse mix of market sectors is so important to the health of a retirement portfolio.
I still see the tech portfolios. I think, well, tech is where the growth is. You have to have a balance in there. You don't ever want to be more than maybe 15 to 20% in any one sector.
Steve can help you reorganize your retirement portfolio. He can make suggestions about the sectors of the future. And if you'd like, a KPP financial program that fits your goals and life situations today. To schedule your one-to-one, one-hour checkup with Steve via Skype or telephone or in person in California, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review, or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. And now more Invest Talk, a service of KPP Financial. For more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And now let's get back to the Q&A. 888-992-4278, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve, Justin. Love the show. Love what you guys teach us every day stuff on the podcast. Anyways, I have a quick question here. I notice that Costco is now giving a dividend payment along with their stock. I think they're doing it, I don't know if it's quarterly or semi-annually, but I just noticed that they started a dividend payment, and the stock has looked to be a buy, and a lot of their numbers look pretty good. What's your guys' thoughts on Costco? Would that be something you'd purchase for the next 2, 3, 4 years down the road and a future growth potential? Thanks. Look forward to hearing from your answers. Bye.
I was looking at Costco. I think we all know who Costco is. It looks like they've been paying a dividend for a long time, so I'm not sure where you're getting the fact that this is new, but they do yield about 1.1%. So not a big dividend payer by any means. Certainly a great stock that anybody should have on their watch list. This is a fantastic company. I mean, I shop there regularly. I have a Costco credit card for my rewards and everything. So I certainly like Costco. It's not cheap at these levels. It's certainly overvalued to some degree here. So it's not cheap. I would like to pick it up more in the low 100s. Now it's in the high 100s. You know, it's about $168.42 at the close today. And this is a name that I would like to pick up in the next recession. I mean, right now, the PE is 31. Very, very high, very expensive. If you look at the operating earnings yields, about 5%. It's okay, but doesn't set my world on fire. And earnings are certainly not growing dramatically either. And revenue growth is in the 2 to 3% range. So modest debt, I like that, only 34% return debt to equity. Return on equity is 21%, so very profitable, very, very good company long term. So I like that it's on your watch list. I just wouldn't be buying it up here. And the dividend you're talking about, it's not really new. That's it's pretty standard. They've been paying a dividend for at least 10 years and has been growing. They've been raising it pretty much every year, it looks like, yeah. Every year, in the last 10 years, they've raised it. So that will likely continue. So keep it on your watch list and buy the dips. Don't chase it after this run from, 145 all the way to 168. It'll probably give some of that back in this year at some point, and that's when I would probably pick it up. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Now, Trump is bullish for gold. Trump is bullish for gold, and you've seen that. You saw, and originally, right when he was elected, the gold market sold off, the stock market soared, and the hope and the expectation that we were going to get a standard Reagan Republican type of pro free market supply side president. But people are now coming around to the idea that Trump really isn't that market friendly at all. You know, he's pushing protectionism, talking about a border adjustment tax. He's likely to create inflation and potentially could damage the economy with his policies. You know, early action is showing that his comments about Mexico on trade, enacting a travel ban on these seven predominantly Muslim countries. And this is indicating that Trump is more concerned with those things than strong economic reforms like tax reform and rolling back regulation, etc., that will help our economy, help businesses. Now, he's doing things and negotiating large companies that bringing jobs back, and that's great. That's nice. But his policies seem to be a little more aggressive and reckless than I think the market is pricing in at this point. And I think the gold market has it right. The gold market's been on fire since the start of the year. And I think this is only going to continue. You know, a lot of big investors, including Stanley Druckenmiller, originally he thought, along with the market, that a Trump presidency was actually better for business, better for the economy. But so far, he's not giving a lot of indication that that's actually true. And I'm not trying to be partisan in any way. I'm just giving you the sense of what I'm seeing and what the market's telling me. So be aware of that, and you got to have some gold exposure in your portfolio. If you don't, you're really missing out. So I want to hear from you. We have about 15 minutes left in the show. So if you have a question, give us a call. 888-99-CHART is our number. Now, each month, Steve sets aside time to get with our listeners via Skype or telephone to look over their individual portfolios and their whole financial picture overall. He looks at retirement account documents, answers questions, makes some recommendations, and gives them a sense of what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong. And that's everybody. You know, nobody's financial picture is perfect, and you can always improve on it. And Steve's extensive background is well suited for getting a sense of everyone's picture and pushing ideas that will get them in a better financial situation. So if you'd like to set up time with him, he's actually in the Bay Area today meeting with four or five clients, potential clients. If you'd like to set up a meeting with him in the future, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then Portfolio Review.
What's the biggest challenge for 401k investors? Well, many have said working with the limitations of their plan and not knowing how to make any better choices. So you just take no action at all. Well, that's where Active 401k comes in. This new system is actively and continuously assessing and calibrating the choices in your employer's plan and making timely recommendations that you can implement online. If you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Jake calling out of York, PA. My friend and I discuss stocks fairly regularly, and he was discussing an ETF, UBS ETF, with the ticker symbol BDCL. That's B as in boy, D as in dog, C as in carrot, L as in licorice. I'm not sure that either one of us really understand what it is besides being a leveraged ETF. I'm just wondering if either one of you could explain it for us and potentially let us know whether it's a good investment or not. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right, BDCL. Long. This is an interesting one to me. BDCL. I'm trying to link to Wells Fargo. Two times leveraged long, E-Trax linked to Wells Fargo Business Development Company Index. Business Development Company Index. Okay. I need to do a little more research on this. It's certainly leveraged to, okay, a business development index. I would need to know what that is. I mean, it's a leveraged fund, so this is a trading vehicle. You're not going to use this as a long-term buy and hold for any reason. Anything that's leveraged is going to be a trading vehicle, so understand that. Then I need to understand what's the Wells Fargo Business Development Company Index. What companies do they hold? And then I can get a sense of, is that a good index? Is that bad? Is that a growth index, a value index, small cap, large cap, dividend paying? I need to understand that. So this is super kind of opaque to me, so it's very hard for me to give you a lot of information. But in the end, it's a leveraged ETF. Only use it as a trading vehicle. 888-99 chart is our number. Let's take another question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Dave. I'm a podcast listener from Pennsylvania. I had a question regarding Sportsman's Warehouse Holdings, SPWH. I initially looked at this, thought it was had some great fundamentals. The chart also looked like the last two times it hit $8, it bounced back up. And when I bought this, it had just hit 8 and started to go back up again, but it subsequently dropped about 20%. PE was well below the industry standard, 9.5. It's showing positive earnings over the last few years, although it looks like first quarter earnings are actually negative, but it's been like that since 2013, I think. Revenue and cash flow are increasing. The profit margins are okay, but they're a little below standard. The growth doubling or tripling the industry and the return of equity. I did have a particular question about this. It's showing 1,300. I'm sure that this is skewed somehow, maybe related to debt or something, but because it does have a lot of debt. But I was wondering if you could just explain how a return of equity could be 1,300% or what would actually skew this. And if you wouldn't mind giving me your opinion on this stock as well. Like I said, I'm down 20%. It's a micro cap. I understand it's going to be volatile. I'd like to see where you stand. I'd like to hold on to it. Hopefully it'll bounce up, but if not, certainly not afraid to cut bait on this one either. Thanks again. Bye.
All right, looking at Sportsman's Warehouse Holdings, the symbol is SPWH. This operates 66 stores in 20 states, and it sells outdoor sporting goods, hunting goods, shooting, fishing, camping gear, etc. So it's an industry that is pretty strong. In the retail space, that particular area of the marketplace is stronger than most. So that's a positive. Now the negative is something you touched on, and that is the debt. And it does have very high return on equity, but that's because it is massively leveraged, and I don't like that. And it's operating cash from operations has fallen, and it looks like last quarter it fell. It's fallen from about 38 million in July, second quarter of 2015, and now it's down to 16.6 million. So its cash from operations is declining, and that's definitely not good in a business that is encumbered by a lot of debt. And they don't have positive cash flow, free cash flow, because they're putting a lot into capital spending, and their operating cash flow has actually fallen from 36 million in 2016, and the trailing 12 months is only $17 million. So something is changing, and not in a good way for this company. So I would cut bait because I do think that the retail sector as a whole is getting in trouble. I think you're going to start seeing bankruptcies. I think I talked about that last week about the expected rise in bankruptcies out of the retail sector, and it's actually supposed to be the sector with the most bankruptcies out of all for this year, out of all sectors. So could sportsmen be one of them? I'd have to dig a little deeper into their debt and really understand a little bit more. But the fact that it's fallen from $14 a share just the middle of last year to $6.63 at the close today tells me once you get in those single digits and near $5 a share, I start thinking bankruptcy. And that's what worries me. So I would need to dig a little deeper, but I would probably cut bait because it looks to me like the market is starting to really worry about the bankruptcy potential. And if that happens, you're pretty much going to lose all your money in the stock. So I would cut bait and find something else. Let's go to James in New York. How you doing, James?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well.
I wanted to ask about SeaWorld Entertainment, okay. And I was thinking of not buying it, but maybe shorting that company.
Shorting it. I don't hate the idea because they certainly are in some hot water, shall we say? And I think they're doing my issue is they're doing the right thing in a way. They've talked about they're not bringing any more orcas. They're going to phase them out of, I think they cut the show completely. So certainly with Blackfish, they have a big negative mark on them. And can they rebrand themselves and restructure themselves to get rid of that negative connotation that I think a lot of consumers have with SeaWorld now that Blackfish is out and everyone's kind of realizing that trapping orcas in a small pool compared to the big ocean is probably not the nicest idea, right? So what you're thinking is that whole controversy is going to bring down their business as a whole.
I think so, and I have a lack of faith in maybe their abilities to rebrand, like you mentioned. I don't know what it is they would do to make that stock go up to levels, profit levels. I think maybe shorting it might be a way to make some money on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are still profitable. Profits have fallen from $1.21 in 2013 to only $0.31 in 2016. Now, profits just rise again in 2017, but that's just analyst expectation. I think you might be a little too late to the ball game and is consolidating nicely up here. I see what you're saying, but to me, I think you're too late to the ball game, and I think it's a risky bet. Okay. Thanks, James.
Thank you.
No problem. You're listening to Invest Talk. If you can't get near a phone or you'd like to ask a question directly, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin or Steve button, and we'll get back to you.
Hi, Steve and Justin. Alex from El Paso here. Yesterday, you talked on your show about having a plan. So as someone who does kind of have a plan, I know which investments I want to make, but also as a recent college graduate who probably, makes less money than someone who has been working for a while, is it better to make the investments I want to make a little bit at a time, or should I save up to jump in all at once? Thanks for answering my question, and have a good one.
I would say you want to kind of dollar cost average in over time. For new investors, it makes the most sense, especially the best strategy, I think, if you have a low dollar amount, I'm talking under $50,000, and you're saving on a consistent basis, whether that's $100 a month, $200 a month, $500 a month, whatever that is to use no load, no transaction fee mutual funds, or maybe be at a broker where you have zero commission ETFs. Because commissions, they eat things up. They eat to returns on such a small amount. So you want to make sure that you're not paying many transaction fees. So I would use no transaction fee mutual funds or no commission ETFs. Find a broker that has those and create a portfolio and just consistently invest dollar cost average over time. And I think that will be the best way to go. Then once you get around the $100,000 mark, then you can start diversifying into individual companies, doing a little bit more in-depth research. And by that time, hopefully you'll understand how different areas of the market work, how much risk you have in one sector versus another, or one asset class versus another. And you know that will further your edification towards making individual investment selections. So that's the way I do it. Don't need to jump in all at once. Now, if I was advising President Trump on the dollar, I think there's various pros and cons of having a strong dollar policy and a weak dollar policy. And for many, many years, starting really with the Clinton administration, the mantra has always been strong dollar policy, even though the dollar has declined in general over that time. And the mantra has always been strong dollars in the nation's best interest. And that's been the official policy. But if you listen to comments from Steve Mnuchin and Trump trade advisor Peter Navarro, they're suggesting that this administration is rethinking that policy. Now, a strong dollar policy really means that we're not going to use the dollar as a trade weapon. And we won't seek to depreciate it to reduce our debt burdens. The problem is our debt's getting so big and we're in the midst of a currency war throughout the world that it's very hard to not have a weak dollar policy. Now, the worry is that if you do have a weak dollar policy, it will create inflation, which is kind of starting to happen already. And it creates even more of a trade war around the world. And we're already in a trade war. But this will exacerbate it if we have a weak dollar policy. Now, when unemployment is high and inflation is low, we have kind of deflation, a weak dollar policy makes a ton of sense because it boosts demand for our exports. Well, with the economy now kind of a full employment, a weak dollar is probably just going to create inflation. It's not really going to create a ton more demand for our exports, even though that's what Trump is trying to push for. So I think with a tight labor market, a weak dollar policy probably isn't the best way to go because it's just going to create inflation, most likely. But I think that's actually what Trump is going to do. And that's why I think inflation is going up and one of the reasons why gold's doing so well. Now, our time is up for this hour. Are you one of our InvestDoc Insiders? It's a free service making information and education available to you 24 hours a day, including Steve and myself's webinars that you can replay whenever. So sign up for free on investtalk.com. Click on the InvestTalk tab. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, executive vice president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you again for being with us. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.